This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Neighborhood Tutoring Program. A guide for establishing a neighborhood tutoring program for your church or civic organization. And the author is Dwayne M. Miller. And Dwayne joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Crossbooks. Hello, Dwayne.
Hello, and thanks for having me on.
Well, this is a very unique idea, and just really glad that you brought it to the forefront the way you have. Let me read what you've written about your book. You say this: this book provides a validated concept for providing free, on-site, academic tutoring to students in grades 1 through high school who reside in economically disadvantaged neighborhoods. The book provides detailed but easy-to-follow steps for your group to establish and operate your very own on-site tutoring program. Very much needed today, that's for sure. So, great idea. What brought all this about, Dwayne? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. My undergraduate degree was in education, so I started out with that line of thought, I guess. But then I ended up in the Air Force for 22 years, and during that time I managed to stay involved with education hither and thither along the way, taught for the University of Maryland overseas and so forth. Had an ROTC assignment at College Park, Maryland. And when I retired from the Air Force, I got involved in education full-time, which was a very natural transition for me. And I spent 13 years in what I would call an economically depressed neighborhood, teaching middle school. And over that time frame, it just became apparent to me that there were a group of students that, they're the students that I said I cried about at the end of each year, because I'm afraid we really didn't do nearly as much for them as we should have. And part of the reason for that is because they just weren't getting access to the assistance that probably was available, but not available to them because of economic reasons or maybe transportation. They would go home on the bus, and that was pretty much the end of their education, and wouldn't do homework, and just weren't progressing. So out of that realization, I guess, I started thinking about maybe we need to take tutoring to these students, and it took me about 13 years of thinking and planning and debating about how I would do this before I actually decided to jump in and give it a try about 3 years ago.
Well, this is a guidebook. It's to assist to accomplish these goals through an on-site neighborhood tutoring center. Of course, the internet, everyone is connected.
The internet is wonderful. And we use the internet in every center we've set up. One of our components of it is about a 7 or 6, 7, 8 computers in a little computer lab. And that's just fantastic because it gives us access to really a world of wonderful material that we can bring into the classroom for the students. Plus, a number of the students, especially the early elementary grades, because we tutor from first grade through high school, a number of those students don't have computers at home. And despite having computer labs in school and so forth, just really aren't familiar with how to use a computer, how to take care of it, how to research, how to look up material. So that in its own right is a big help. So the internet is serving us in a wonderful capacity.
And of course, the real bottom line here is this is all about volunteers.
Yes, it is. In fact, a really big part of the program is the concept that I think we've got a tremendous volunteer force in this country. And I don't mean just older people either, but I think there are tremendous rewards that come from volunteering. And this is a faith-based program. So from my own personal perspective, I think there are rewards that are achieved by volunteering services and helping, showing love, Christian love, and I think that's a really big part of the program, and it's actually built into the program, and it's really, I guess, what I consider to be the motivator for getting the tutors that we need.
How would a neighborhood start this kind of a program?
I'll tell you what I do literally. I like to say when I go into a town, I look for the most needy part of town that I can find. And that's literally what I've done. And then I'll go to, oftentimes it's an apartment complex or a townhouse complex, and I'll stop in at the management office for that unit, and I'll ask them if they would like a tutoring center. And we sit down and talk about what the on-site tutoring program is about. And frankly, the response I get has been very enthusiastic. That's not surprising, but that's a normal response. And then I end up chatting with them for a while, and what I'm looking for are churches or other civic organizations that are already reaching into that community, and normally there are some. And then I'll go to those, I'll say churches because that's who we've worked with in most cases, and talk to them. So I've identified a need, then I'm looking for a source of support for that need, and we call those sponsoring organizations. And then I just essentially bring that sponsoring organization to work on the need, and I'm very much a facilitator, and we develop a tutoring center. And we recruit tutors through the sponsoring organization. I've got a model that I follow. We adapt it to each situation, but it's a good starting point, and that's really what the book is about. And before we know it, we've got a tutoring center up and running.
Well, how does your tutoring program interact with the students' regular school?
One of the key concepts here is that I want it to parallel the regular school as closely as we can possibly make it. I do not want this to be a program where we're dumping an additional curriculum or work on these students. That's probably the last thing that they would need. So when I go into a particular setting, I'll take a look at the school that those students are feeding into. Then I go and talk with the people in that school system. I try to work very closely with the school systems. And then we use the same materials that they're using. We follow the same pacing that they're following. And basically, we try to be a supporter to the existing school system.
Some critics may say that you centering on faith-based program, you're just trying to recruit followers, to your church or your religious philosophy.
I think that's a very valid point that people raise, and I welcome them to raise it because I really would like to discuss that, if they have that concern. My approach to it is that we can call it faith-based or we can call it character building. If I'm working with a sponsoring organization, maybe a Rotary Club or a Lions Club or some other civic-minded organization, what we'll do is just adjust the curriculum, if you will, in that portion of our program so that there's less emphasis on any particular faith and there's more emphasis on character in a broader sense. This program is totally non-denominational. It is Christian-based, but like I just said, we can adjust it very easily to fit a non-Christian-based sponsor if that's what we're working with.
Is this going to require government funding?
No. In fact, one of my going-in positions is that I want this to be a volunteer, community-centered program, and I feel and I think we've proven that we can do this very effectively without any state or federal funding. It is not an expensive program. I've been able to beg, borrow, and whatever else, the equipment. I get textbooks where I can get them, and the computers have been donated from sources that I have. So we put this together at a relatively low expense, and then once it's operating, the volunteers, of course, are just that, so there are no salaries involved. So we're really able to operate this program with relatively low funding.
Well, you call this a clear, concise blueprint. It offers a step-by-step guidance that can be tailored to fit specific needs. What about self-esteem needs of students?
One of the things that I've built into the program is exactly that, because I think by the very nature of the population that we're dealing with, self-esteem is one of the areas that we can make really big impacts. I don't sell this program as a mentoring program per se. It's an academic tutoring program, but there's a tremendous amount of mentoring that actually occurs within the program. We've found in the centers that we've opened that most of our students are repeat students. They come back each session, and they very quickly have their favorite tutors, and there are very strong bonds that are built there and that grow there. So, I think self-esteem is a big part of that. Plus, a lot of the students that we're working with are not those that typically turn in their homework and get a nice A plus back. So what we found is once many of these students, or some of the students anyway, start turning in work and start getting that positive feedback from their teachers in their regular school setting, that can be a tremendous motivator. And we notice day after day or session after session, when we do our lead-in, our introductory, our character building part of the program, that the students are very, very quick to point out if they got a good grade in a spelling test or some other test. So these students are very happy to share their successes, and I think that's part of what we're looking for.
And through your research, you didn't find any other kind of program with your same characteristics.
You know, there are lots of tutoring programs, and I'm not, and they're very good. I guess my goal here is to see the neighborhood tutoring program as not competing with any of them. We're certainly not trying to compete with the for-fee programs, and I've tutored for those in the past. I have nothing but praise for them. But this is a niche program. It's designed to go after that one group of students that's probably not going to be reached very effectively by any other tutoring program because of the economic or transportation or language difficulties. So I think it is very much a niche program that, unfortunately, that group of students exists in almost every, if not every, school system across the country. And I think anybody that's really been associated with education can probably identify pretty directly with the group of students that I'm talking about. In terms of, you know, it can be, it's an economic situation. So they don't have the money to, you know, pay for other programs. There might be after school programs, but they don't have transportation necessarily to get to those. So our whole goal is to take tutoring to that particular group.
And you get down right to the details, including legal and organizational issues.
Yes, I do. I think, you know, if I try to put myself in the position that I actually was in for for several years as I thought through how to do this, those issues need to come up. For example, I would never ask anybody to tutor for me or for a center if they didn't have liability insurance, just as most teachers in a public or private school setting have liability insurance. So I've addressed that in the book and possible sources for that. We have to be cognizant of the legal issues because not all of our tutors are educators. And, you know, it's you just have to be very careful in terms of what you say and how you touch students or whatever. And, again, educators are very familiar with that because it's a part of their daily routine. But we try to be very, very careful through our orientation and training programs to make sure that we've, you know, dealt with those issues because we need to protect the tutors as well as the students. So we have operational handbooks. It's probably showing some of my Air Force background, but it's very structured in terms of programs and what's expected and what's expected of the parents and what's expected of the tutors. And, we've tried to organize it as a, you know, a turnkey operation and still maintain flexibility because I suspect that no two tutoring centers shall ever be exactly alike. And I think one of the strengths of the program is that we can take the basic model we have and adapt it really very easily to whatever particular environment we're going into.
Of course, like you just outlined about the volunteers and what they need to know, and of course you need to know about the volunteers, who they are.
Yes, every volunteer that we have has to have a background investigation, just as teachers do in regular school settings. Now, if we're working with a sponsor that's a church, most of those organizations already have those processes set up because their teachers and so forth have background investigations for working with students. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, it's very, very beneficial for this program to tie into good, strong sponsors like that, because it saves money, frankly. And the process is already in place for conducting those investigations. So picking sponsors that are in the business, if you will, of doing some of these things can really help and simplify the process.
We've been listening to Duane M. Miller. He is the author of his book, The Neighborhood Tutoring Program, a guide for establishing a neighborhood tutoring program for your church or civic organization. Duane, tell us how to get your book.
The book is available through Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and it's available in hardback, paperback, or via electronic mode. It starts as low as, I think, $3.39 or something like that for the electronic one, and readily available.
Thank you so much, Duane, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Crossbooks.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Food Isn't What It Used to Be, A Biblical Approach to Health. And the author is Christine Andrew, and Christine joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Christine.
Hello, Steve.
Well, and you understand this right from your own experience. You've had some bad health in the past.
Yes, I am not immune to the temptations of junk food. I was brought up in a home where food was very important and home cooked and fresh, and I left home and I ate whatever I wanted.
So you weren't
and
you weren't it you weren't eating back. Right at all then, right? Were you? You weren't eating right.
No. No. I ate fast food. I ate donuts. I drank soda and thinking nothing of it. And it hit me at about 40. It all came to a head at about 40.
Well, it's all part of the society in which we live. Of course, the media helps train our, I guess, our eating habits. But your book, like you point out, it's this dramatic transformation from what it was from 6,000 years ago and earlier to even as recent as 100 years ago compared to what it is today. So,
yes.
You know, food just isn't what it used to be, like your title. Well, before we get into more details about your book, and everyone's really going to learn a lot, tell us about your background and how you decided and why you decided to write this book.
Well, I am a certified nutritionist, and so I see clients consultation one-on-one, and many of them would ask me questions about health topics and were not sure about really how to eat and why they have these diseases. They would ask me, well, how do I become toxic? They really didn't know. It was interesting just to see and hear the Christian community. They didn't know either. Why not? Why don't they know this? The church in general has been very open about drunkenness and adultery and smoking, abortion, and other so-called sins, but they rarely talk about food and what to eat and about our bodies. If our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit, eating correctly, does it make a difference? Absolutely. And so I had come across a quote written by John MacArthur of Southern California. John MacArthur wrote, "An uncompromising life is characterized by an unashamed boldness that calls us to an uncommon standard. Allow God to do with your life as he pleases, that he might broaden your influence and glorify him." And with that quote, that was, I felt God telling me, I need to take a stand. I need to be bold about health, the truth, what God says about health, not any of this name it, claim it, health and wealth theology or doctrine that's out there. What does the truth of God say? And I want to influence others and glorify God through it. And that inspired me to write my book.
And of course, we all know that there's much more disease than ever before. It seems like it's amazing the amount of drugs they're trying to sell on TV to help us with every disease.
There is now diseases that have reemerged that never thought possible. Now, why is that? It has to be something has changed in our food. And that sent me on a mission to go find out how it's changed, why it's changed. People are now blaming their ancestors for their diseases. Only 20% of diseases are inherited. That means 80% is due to lifestyle and choices of eating.
So basically, we're just taking into our bodies a lot of toxins.
A lot of toxins. From the air we breathe, from scented products, from the plastics that we are coming in contact with, to the pesticide residues on food, to even toxic relationships, divisions, factions, and all of that has an impact on our health.
Well, I think we all know that we know something about the lack of nutrition in processed foods, and it's probably more than just lack of nutrition. It probably can trigger other things that can lead to bad health.
Well, it's also malabsorption. If people are not absorbing the nutrients, it doesn't matter how healthy. And people will say to me, but I eat healthy. How come I'm still sick? Well, what do you eat? And they tell me that isn't healthy. What? And so there's a deception there about what is truly healthy to eat. They may not be eating donuts, but if they're eating or consuming something with sodium benzoate, which is a toxic preservative, that's not healthy. Even though it may say fruit juice, 100% juice, but then it has sodium benzoate in it, that's not healthy. But they don't realize these little details where they can get these toxins from, even though they may seem to be healthy. It's subtle. It's very subtle. Just like Satan is. Isn't he very subtle?
He is. He is. And then there are these new phrases that I guess are contemporary phrases in food manufacturing, genetically modified, genetically engineered food. Well, that doesn't sound very nutritious or healthy.
It is not. And people, there's an argument for and against, but the bottom line is if an animal, a cow, will not eat genetically modified food, it will get sick. What is that doing to our bodies? In the long run, it's going to create more inflammation and disease. And our bodies, like I say in my book, our bodies are not created to handle all these onslaughts of things like genetically modified. And what the body will do, it will launch an attack. And when it launches an attack, we have inflammation. So there's a lot more inflammatory diseases out there, and the body's it's doing what it was created to do, fight off.
And most of our diet today, would you describe it, the normal diet today, is acidic?
Very acidic. All the junk foods, the highly processed foods, the red meats, this dairy produces acid in our bodies, and God has created us with minerals, and minerals to buffer the acid. And if we have too much and for a long extended period of time, pretty soon the body's going to say, okay, I'm done compromising for you. And it's going to give out, and that disease process will begin.
So what would you recommend, according to the Bible, how should we be eating?
That's a great question, and I have that in my book. In chapter 6, I talk about how to improve our health. And the first thing we need to do is start detoxifying and getting rid of the toxins that are in our body. And I give quite a few examples of what to do. And then, what do we eat? Well, through looking through the Bible, I thought God has to have given some direction. And he does, very clearly. He wants us to eat healthy foods. What healthy foods that were given to us? Whole grains, beans, lentils, seeds, honey, vegetables in season, and fruit, and butter. Yes, butter. Butter has been good for us since the beginning of time. And he wants us to eat simple, not hoarding food. Eat simple. That's what David did. That's what Paul did. He also told us to eat fermented foods and to prepare our own foods. That's right from the Bible in Psalm 128:2. When you eat the labor of your hands, you shall be happy and it shall be well with you. That's wisdom for today. And he also says to eat in moderation. So whether we, whatever we drink or eat, just to do it in moderation. So that would mean drinking, not drinking too much, not eating too much. So everything in moderation. But it was very specific about what to eat.
And of course, what should we drink? Because all we see and hear everywhere is, you know, this kind of soda or that kind, and you know, whether it's diet or the real thing, it's soda seems to make up most of our drinking, and of course, there's coffee and tea.
Well, I also looked that up in the Bible. Okay, what does the Bible say we should drink? What was given to us to drink? And what I found was milk, water, wine, and grape juice. Those were the things that sustained the people for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. So
I talk about milk for years. It went from the cow to the table. That's what they drank. And the water. And they were encouraged to drink from your own cistern, your own well. And I think that's wisdom for today, too. We can only trust what we make, what we grow, and what we have in our own house. So it was very interesting to find, and then people ask me about coffee. Well, what about coffee? Well, coffee was not discovered until 400 BC, and so coffee wasn't around thousands of years ago. So the people ask me about it, and is it a healthy drink? Well, yes and no. It all depends. But you'll have to read my book to find out more about that.
And your book also includes snack ideas. You've got an ancient meal plan. You have a sample. You have recipe ideas.
Yes. People ask me about certain foods, biblical foods. And so I did some research about, well, what did they eat? And because the standard American breakfast is cereal, milk, and orange juice, which is the worst meal that you could ever eat. And so what did the Romans eat? What did the Greeks eat in the morning? They ate cheese, eggs, olives, figs, barley, bread, porridge, honey with salt. That was the standard diet of the ancients. Very far cry. And even during the Revolution, I researched, okay, well, how did it change? Were they 200 years ago? And it was mainly meat and whatever vegetables or in fruit were on the plantation. It wasn't just a simple cereal and milk and orange juice. And the meal sustained them for hours. Nowadays, a bowl of cereal will maybe last you an hour.
Then you're hungry again, and you know kids want a snack, and unfortunately we're not giving them the right snacks. Just a lot of great information, Christine, a lot of great ideas, and truth from the Bible. What else can we say? The title is Food Isn't What It Used to Be, A Biblical Approach to Health, and we've been listening to Christine Andrew. She's the author. Christine, tell us how to get your book.
You can find it at westbopress.com, Food Isn't What It Used to Be. You can also find it at amazon.com or barnesandnoble.com.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you. I thank you for having me. Thank you for interviewing me. It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing. And we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Loprete. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Loprete, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, A Travesty and a Triumph of Love, a True Story. And the author is Sandra Stacy Rivero. And Sandra joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Sandra.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Great to have you with us. This is a memoir. You call it an Odyssey of Faith by an LDS woman in search of basically your stepson, and you didn't even know his name?
No, that's right. The book format itself, I formatted it kind of like the story behind It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, great.
The first chapter, beginning with part one, the first chapter is about how my husband, after 28 years, had ran into the boy's mother at Encanto Park. They were staging the Phoenix Folk Traditions Music Festival that he had a position in, a performance. And he ran into her, and they had words. So he failed to obtain the boy's name or even where he lived, and I had no information whatsoever on how to find him.
So that
I
was
didn't
the...
even know about him because the chapter ends where he knew now that he was going to have to tell his wife, and I'm the wife he has to tell.
So he then never knew, his former wife had never told him that he had a son?
No.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, she did. So my husband held it as a secret.
Ah, okay.
From the time the boy was born.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why he kept the secret is because he was always afraid that I would divorce him again, because there is a divorce in our marital history. But the second chapter, it goes right into my past. Like a biography that
mm-hmm.
brought me up to that point. And the end of part one ends where I and my husband joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which then followed scripture study and other studies relating to God and Jesus Christ as well. So I began writing a journal. We joined the church in 84, and I began writing my journal, which honed my talent as an author. And so That's where I begin my story again in part two called The Search.
Well, that must have been quite a challenge, knowing how to search for your son, you know, and because you had no idea where he was.
No, I was inspired to use my my newly gained talent as a family history researcher, which is big in our church, mm-hmm. and I learned different little ways on how to find somebody, but the challenge was finding somebody alive, because you run into privacy laws and things like that when you're looking for somebody alive that you just don't run into when you're doing family history search.
You speak of receiving revelations in your quest to find your stepson. Now, what kind were these? Tell us about these revelations that you received.
Well, in the beginning, I was, I guess you could say I bottomed out. I was brokenhearted mainly because I didn't know where to start. And I began to pray and pray very hard for a way to find him. And at the time, my husband didn't remember very much of his life with the boy's mother because he was an alcoholic at the time, and a lot of his story with her is hazy. But he began to open up to me, perhaps by the same inspiration, to tell me bits and pieces of their story, which details I kept out of the book to protect her family's privacy, of course. But somewhere along the line, he remembered her father's name. I change his name in the book. I almost blew it and said his name, but his name is in the book, and I realized that as a starting point. And then later on, I was inspired to go to look at phone book archives to find the grandfather's address at the time that their story was going on. And I found it in the Phoenix Public Library, and I just began that as a starting point for a search to find him.
So your story, as you say, proves itself out that we have to exercise faith and act upon the Lord's admonition to seek and find. That's basically what you were doing.
Yes, because there's a scripture about that. Well, seek and ye shall find, knock and it shall be opened. But I didn't think to write my book until about the middle of my story, in the middle of my book, that says, unto whom much is given, of such much is required. And in our faith, we have a commandment of consecration, where we are to consecrate our time, talents, and whatever the Lord gives us or what he may give us for the building up of the kingdom of God. Those were two reasons that I was inspired to write my book, because first of all, I asked the Lord himself that if he lets me find him, I would do something to that magnitude to more or less pay him back for that blessing. And it came in the form of a performance by pianist Marvin Goldstein that we attended. And after his performance, he gave a talk about the importance of consecrating one's talents for those purposes. So I began to take notes, beginning from when he came to Encanto Park and ran into the boy's mother, and then taking us up through about midway point of the book, and that's when I took notes, beginning with when he ran into his mother, up until the second time. I end my book with a second time of Encanto Park's music festival, where we're all together, and this was all after I had found him. But God speaking to me came in the form of here a little and there a little until the brighter day. The main thing is he won't answer you when you want him to answer you. He's going to answer you when he says the time is right.
Well, obviously you found him.
Yes.
And that must have been quite a reunion for your husband and him. Did he know his real father very much?
Yes. After they met for the first time, the boy now a young man, the boy told him that he had always known who his dad was. And there's a little funny quip towards the end where he says, I know you want to punch me out, so feel free to do so.
Okay.
And the boy said, oh, no, I'm saving that for my stepfather, because he had a mean stepfather in his life.
Oh, goodness. Well, it took 28 years, right? 28 years to finally find him.
Yes.
28 years, and you didn't give up.
No, because of my love of family unity. Excuse me. And I just wanted to bring him into our family, which was the rest of his family.
Right.
So we could all be a family again. And I continue a relationship with his mother to this very day, because the publication of my book didn't happen until after I lost my husband last May. It's almost a year now since his passing, and he had lymphoma.
Well, we're sorry.
I know.
Now, one of your themes, you say this, your book teaches the world in detail just how Satan can get the best of us by flattery. Now, tell us a little bit more about why this is a theme.
Because when I first met my husband, we were in high school, and we went steady for 2 years, and when I turned 18, I decided to join his church because we had already made a commitment to get married, and I don't really believe in the interfaith marriage because that gets to the core of our very being. And so I joined his church, learned all about it, and Satan enters into what I describe as the root cause of our breakup of that marriage, followed by 2 years later, by God's inspirations and the need to forgive and come back together again. So that's in the book, too, but only in more detail. About Satan, he knew I would say no to a lot of bombastic temptations that he puts before us, because he knew how Christian I was. So what he does to Christians, he will give them a slightly gray thing to do, and we are holding to the belief that he gradually leads us through all the shades of gray, down to charcoal, and down to the blackest black. And that's more or less how he tempted us away from each other. And I tell the story of such little bitty temptations that led up to our breakup.
But you did come back together.
Yes. Yes, because through the 2 years of our separation and divorce, let me back up and say prior to our separation, when I was going through all kinds of trials within the marriage, I felt that I should pray to God, even as a non-member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I was still a member of the other church, and I prayed to God that I have this feeling that something's gonna happen to me to take me away from him, meaning God. And I begged of God to never, ever leave my side. And it didn't seem like he wanted to stay by my side, but after 2 years, I was taught lessons in life that taught me that divorce doesn't work. Not in our case. We just traded one batch of problems for a different batch of problems. Both kinds were orchestrated by Satan himself. And I write about that.
Well, just in the time we have left, just about a minute.
Oh, dear.
Why don't you tell us about how God speaks to our minds through the Holy Ghost. Now, some may question that. Some, unbelievers may question that idea.
Well, I guess you could describe it as even unbelievers, they might run into a situation where they have a gut feeling that they shouldn't do something. And
That's probably what they would call it, wouldn't they? A gut feeling, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You could say it's our conscience. Even unbelievers know about the conscience and how the conscience tells you.
So when we feel impressed about something, you would say to that person, they're probably receiving revelation from God.
Yes, this is God speaking to us when he says don't go there, and later on a drastic happening occurs and that makes the person glad they didn't go there. Like the idea of not going on a plane trip with a bunch of friends. You can't go. It comes to pass you can't go. Letting the others go and the plane crashes. Yeah, that's what happens. That person is told not to go on the plane because God has a work for him later on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I hope that describes it because I know there are a lot of unbelievers out there.
Well, Sandra, we appreciate you being with us to help us understand your new book, A Travesty and a Triumph of Love, a true story. Sandra Stacy Rivero, that's Sandra's full name, and tell us how to get your book, Sandra.
It's being advertised right now on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And Westbo Press also has a bookstore that you can buy online with.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbo Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.